Ladies, have you been led astray? Did you diddle where maybe you shouldn't have dabbled? Have you been unfaithful to your husband, wife, partner, main squeeze? Well, there's a judgment-free podcast just for you. Raw Truth, Stories of Female Infidelity, hosted by Rebecca Adams, tells the stories of these women from their perspective, anonymously and without judgment.
He got out of his car and tried to kiss me. I pulled back. I was still not wanting an affair. I was not sure what I wanted. Most likely, I just liked the way it felt to be wanted. This did not stop his calls. Several more weeks went by and we met up again. This time by the water. After walking and talking for an hour, I could not take the suspense anymore. I leaned in and kissed him. It was like fireworks.
If you need to come clean, get it off your chest, confess your sins with no Hail Marys required, then Raw Truth, Stories of Female Infidelity is the podcast for you. And remember, it's completely anonymous and judgment-free.
Raw Truth, Stories of Female Infidelity is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe today.
Raw Truth podcasts may contain explicit, sensitive, and questionable content. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual podcaster and are not based on the advice of a licensed psychologist, therapist, or other medical professional. Listener discretion is strongly advised. What does the word ponder actually mean? According to one dictionary, it means to weigh in the mind, to think about, and reflect on. On Let's Ponder with Rebecca Adams, we do just that. We discuss taboo and questionable subject matter. For example, size. Does it really matter? Or do you really want to know the number of partners your significant other has been with? Or what about stories of disastrous one-night stands? How about being in a sexless marriage? These and other topics are what we talk about on this podcast. Wow, it sounds like we've been taken over by something else. But this is Rebecca, and this is Let's Ponder with Rebecca Adams. Today, we're going to talk about the history of porn. When I mentioned that to the Marine, he kind of laughed, and he's like, so what are you going to say? And I said, well, dear, I did some research and pulled some articles and information, and all of those links will be in the episode notes as far as if you want to look it up yourself. But he wasn't able to join us for this one just due to logistics with work and everything like that. So you're stuck with just me. Sorry, guys, but let's go ahead and get started. I imagine that most folks, once they get into their 30s and 40s, have been exposed to a porn movie, porn flick, magazines, things like that. And I remember my very first time that I came across a porno. Oh my gosh, it was upsetting, actually. I wasn't a virgin, but I wasn't exposed to sexual things like that. I mean, I was in high school, 17, and a friend, her mom was out of town, and so a bunch of us were over at her house, and somebody had rented one, and I walked in, and it was a video, of course, the typical porn, right on the action spots, right? And it was a woman there getting it. Two guys at the same time putting their dicks together and screwing her in the same hole. And I remember just thinking, oh my God, it really didn't set well with me. But of course, as I got older and was married and things change and you grow up, you can deal with it differently. And now I just probably shake my head and go, well, she's stretched from here to there now. But it's, yeah, it's funny how it happens. But where did, you know, pornography start? I don't know. And I still don't know if I even really have that information here. But you can go back and you look at like Pompeii. There were a lot of sexual, you know, when they found the bodies, they found sex toys. I mean, you can go back and, I mean, sex toys and all of that stuff go a long way. But where did it start where the men or the women would just sit there and watch other people? I don't know. I know, of course, nowadays it's a lot more in your face with the access with internet and all of that. So even looking on good old Wikipedia here, it shares with us that, you know, it looks like early years before 1920 that they had porn in there. Something says in 1896, Fatima's Coochie Coochie Dance was released as a short Nickelodeon, which was like a gyrating belly dance and moving her pelvis and all of that. It was actually censored because it was considered, you know, a little risque. But then as time went on, porno became just a lot more well-known. I mean, you can look back and see, you know, it's like silent movies, pornos. I mean, come on, that's interesting, isn't it? So definitely, when you get a chance, look up Wikipedia. It tells you all about specific movies and, you know, when it came in the 20s and the 40s and then into the 50s with home movies, Europe and the United States in the 60s. That link is going to be in my episode notes. But yeah, it's crazy to think this has actually been around a long, long time. But going back to this article here, so it starts off, The History of Porn, written by Carol Beauchung, March 11th, 2015. It seems so obvious. If we invent a machine, the first thing we're going to do after making a profit is use it to watch porn. Damon Brown, author of Playboy's Greatest Covers. Pornography is so pervasive today, it's hard to imagine it having a history. Porn can be thought as sex taken out of our imaginations and represented in video, picture, or ancient cave painting, depending on a preference. So, as long as there's been sex, sin, and someone with a modicum of skills and a camera or paleolithic chisel, it seems reasonable to assume that people have been making porn. The results of a cautious Google search seem to bear this out. The oldest depiction of female genitalia is in a rock carving 37,000 years ago. Ancient cultures such as the Egyptians and the Romans also produced many more obviously sexual explicit scenes, mostly in the form of carving, painting, or papyri. Porn, it seems, has been around for a long time. People have always made naked pictures, so what's the big deal now? Why are Christians so worked up about something that's been around forever? And why don't we focus more on pressing issues? Well, this reasoning misses the huge difference between today's porn and the porn of yesteryear. We've come a long way indeed from the porn of the ancients, from papyrus and crude stone carvings to hundreds of thousands of hours of explicit, uncompromising, and often grotesque and violent video. One study estimated that 88% of scenes in porn films contains acts of physical aggression, and 49% of the scenes contain verbal aggression. By far, the most common genre of porn is so-called gonzo porn, which eschews any attempt at a story and focuses on delivering more and more bizarre, demeaning, and body-punishing sex, always at the woman's expense. Then there's the money. Porn is an enormous industry, and its growth shows no sign of stopping. Even with a whole stable of the most skilled papyrus pornographers, it's hard to imagine ancient porn becoming an industry worth the estimated of $97 billion globally. Finally, there's a sheer amount of porn that is being made and watched. Covenant Eyes estimates that, as of this writing, again, this was 2015, there have been more than 420 million internet searches for porn since the beginning of 2015, and that number is constantly increasing. Fully 69% of all pay-per-view content on the internet is porn, and 9 out of 10 users only access free porn. No matter how industrious the carvers and papyrus painters of the old days, there is simply no way they could produce enough pornographic material to completely saturate the culture the way porn has today. It's simply impossible. Sex has always played an important role in human art and thought, but today's porn is abusive, pervasive, and invasive in a completely unprecedented way. So how did we get here? It seems that it started, surprisingly, in the infamously repressed context of the 18th and 19th century England, in an era famous for being scandalized at the sight of women's bare ankles. The pornographic novel flourished. The first and most famous of these is John Cleland's Fanny Hill, published in 1748. Full of extremely graphic scenes, it scandalized the public, was quickly banned, and was obviously a huge success. By 1837, when Queen Victoria took the throne, there was a bustling pornographic book industry with upwards of 50 smut shops on Booksellers Row in London. Once photography and videography were invented, pornographers were among the first to get onto the new technology. The first pornographic film was made by the Frenchman Eugene Pirot and Albert Kirchner in 1896. However, despite growing in popularity, pornography continued to be viewed as something disgusting and sinful and was only enjoyed in secret. Adding to this was the fact that publishing or distributing pornography was illegal in most countries. For it to even begin to reach the cultural acceptance it enjoys today, pornography had to wait until the 1950s and the advent of the mainstream porn magazine, especially Playboy. The magazine was first released in December of 1953 and was an immediate success. By 1959, Playboy had a circulation of over 1 million subscribers. It sold an image to the readers of themselves as Playboys, who were rich, sophisticated, and most importantly, not tied down by any one woman. The idea was a direct rebellion against the Leave It to Beaver, three kids, two car, and a house in the suburbs, family-centric cultures of the 1950s, and it was led by men who felt their prospects for fulfilling life were being curtailed by women, especially their wives. Instead of being tied down and restricted, the ideal playboy was the ultimate consumer. He had the best of everything: scotch, watches, cars, clothes, and of course, women. Hugh Hefner himself, the founder of Playboy, said that Playboy is a combination of sex and status. It's important to note that even at this early juncture, the rise of pornography was inextricably linked to an idea of women which viewed them as a burden to be cast off, or at best, nothing more than another product to be consumed. Hard on the heels of Playboy came Penthouse and Hustler, two magazines that both competed and capitalized on Playboy's success. I remember those were really, really raunchy. These magazines, especially Hustler, pushed the limits of what could be shown in a mainstream magazine. The story of how Playboy, Penthouse, and Hustler competed to outsell and outsleaze the other is a long one, and there isn't enough space to tell it here. But the long and short of it is that, as Gail Dines said in Pornland, quote, "By the time the internet was introduced into homes, the culture had been well-groomed to accept pornography as a part of everyday life rather than as an industry that produces a system of images that debase and dehumanize women and men," end quote. In the nascent times of the web, porn was, unsurprisingly, one of the first things to be shared, and as the web has grown, porn has grown right alongside it. Recently, one of the internet's biggest porn sites even put up an ad in Times Square. Wow. The story of porn's explosive growth ought not to come as a surprise. We are a sinful people and will continue to seek ways to satisfy our selfishness. Nonetheless, it's amazing to see how far porn has come since the days of papyrus pornographers, or even of Fanny Hill. We now live in a culture where, far from being scandalous, porn is seen by many as simply a normal part of life, or at worst, a slightly distasteful distraction. Porn stars are becoming mainstream celebrities, and movies like 50 Shades of Grey are bringing violent and exploitative porn sex right onto the big screen. Sorry, stuttered there a second. How should we respond to this? We should be striving to show the world that there is a different and a better way to approach sex. A way that is not selfish and temporary, but rooted and grounded in love. A way that does not seek simply to take pleasure and gratify itself, but that instead seeks to give a love. In the end, we should seek a way that does not dehumanize and exploit, but that instead of a reflection of the beautiful and self-giving character of God. So that is one person's view about... Let's start that over. So that is one person's view about history and their thoughts on it. But I do have another one, similar but different. And it's called A Brief History of Pornography. It's a psychology, media psychology. Again, the link will be in the episode notes. I am not going to read through this whole article, though. I'm just going to pull out a few little pieces here and there that are interesting. So this is going back into the medieval world. It talks about the 18th century. And there's a paragraph here that kind of stands out, kind of like it was in the first article, but it said, by the time Queen Victoria assumed the monarchy in Great Britain in 1837, Holywell Street, also known as Booksellers Row in London, was home to more than 50 pornographic businesses. Despite, or possibly because of the stigmas on sexual subjects that were typical at the time, pornography thrived throughout the Victorian era in Britain and in the United States. The vast nameless memoir, My Secret Life, 1890, combines a social history of the shady underbelly of a traditionalist society and a meticulous account of one English gentleman's longtime search for sexual fulfillment. The Pearl, 1879 and 1880, a significant month of the time, featured serialized books, short tales, filthy humor, poetry, and choruses and explicit sexual imagery. Such works offer a crucial correction to popular perceptions of Victorian conservatism. That's interesting, because you don't necessarily think of the royals being totally, yeah. Let's see here. The development of the photography and then motion pictures in the 19th century was soon applied to the creation of pornography. Pornographic movies were publicly accessible in as early as the 1920s, and their popularity skyrocketed in the 1960s. The advent of digital video discs, DVDs, in the 90s and video cassettes in the 80s made it possible to distribute pornographic movies widely. It further boosted their usage as they could be watched in secret. So maybe you learned something today. Maybe you didn't. Maybe you're rolling your eyes because I couldn't pronounce a lot of these crazy words. Sorry. But yeah, it's porno, of course, been around for a long time, and there are concerns always. With porn comes addictions, and with addictions comes worries in marriages and relationships. And, you know, as you know, on my podcast, my other one, Raw Truth, a lot of marriages are affected by pornography. These women aren't having sex with their husbands. They're not feeling wanted by their husbands, but they find out the husbands are watching porn. That really does a number on somebody's self-esteem. So it works for some people. It doesn't work for others. And, you know, it all depends on where you are. If you're Christian-based and you're like, you know what, that's something that is absolutely wrong, or if it's like me who, yes, I'm Christian and I understand that's going to happen, that doesn't necessarily mean it's not for me. I can't tell other people it's not for them. You know, I may not choose to watch it, but that doesn't mean that my neighbor is a bad person because maybe he does. Because I don't judge people like that. You know, if their personal life doesn't affect me or my children, then it's not my business. I appreciate you guys being here today. Sorry, my voice is going out on me. I will be back in a couple of weeks with a new episode. And this one, I'm calling it, I Want to Cheat on My Wife. And as you know, with my other podcasts, it's about female infidelity. And once in a while, men want to share their stories. And it doesn't fit on Raw Truth or my Patreon, Raw Truth. So this is a place for them to go ahead and share their story and what they're frustrated with in their relationship that's making them want to cheat on their spouse. So in a couple of weeks, we'll be listening to that. We've only got a couple more episodes before summer break. which is usually June, July, and August. But I will be back before then with a couple more. And yeah, if you have any suggestions, please shoot me an email, rebecca.rawtruth@gmail.com.
You have been listening to Let's Ponder with Rebecca Adams. Your support of Raw Truth Podcasts is truly appreciated. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to my other podcast, Raw Truth, Stories of Female Infidelity. This controversial yet no judgment podcast is a safe place where women can share their stories anonymously of why they chose to be unfaithful. If you have feedback or suggestions for future Let's Ponder topics, please email rebecca.rawtruth@gmail.com. This podcast was written, produced, and edited by Rebecca Adams. If you enjoyed the podcast, please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts.